Hi, everybody. I'm Kristen Von Erich, the first member of the E3G, and you are watching the Iron Claw Cast.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are back with the Iron Claw Cast, a brand new episode here with Marshall and Ross Von Erich. And I got to ask you guys a question right here, right now. You've been telling me there's a mystery guest on. Who is this mystery guest? I demand
that's for us to know and you to find out. So you shut that word hole, D-man. Here's
now, I've been doing some thinking, and I've come up with three people that could it be.
You've been doing some thinking? That's new.
It could either be Bruce or Brody, and everybody knows Kamala ran him out of town.
Okay. We'll do the impersonations later.
Yeah, but impersonations of the pros.
Yeah, we got to leap to the pros. Yeah, but I did want to say thank you from all the Iron Clawcast fans, all the love and support we've been getting. Thank you guys for listening. I can't believe people are actually interested and what we have to say. So this has been really encouraging and awesome. I want to keep pumping these out and keep doing it. But yeah, we do have a special surprise for everybody. So a sibling of ours that experienced every bit of the Von Erich story, the tragedies and the triumphs, is, you know, she's a glue. I've said it before. She's a glue in the family. She definitely keeps us on track and gives us a great perspective of who our uncles really were, and we feel like we know them better because of her. But my sister Kristen Nicholas / Atkinson / Von Erich.
So that's the special guest Kristen is going to be on.
She's going to be
here. Yeah, boom, there it is.
Oh boy, we're in for a treat.
Yeah, she's coming anytime.
And a big week with the updated Dark Side of the Ring coming out with the extra footage. Yeah. You guys look great on it, by the way.
Well, I really, really enjoyed that. I thought Evan and Jason did a tremendous job on that. They were they explained the story to so well and really went in depth.
Yeah, great job at getting the information they got out of my dad. Just, yeah, we said it before. It was great. They did a great job, and we're just glad it's out there and that we hear people are benefiting from the story and just that people are hearing the story, you know.
See, that's what means a lot to us, is that people are using the story for good. That's all my dad wanted from it, you know, is for people to be encouraged. And, you know, it's not a sad story. The legacy continues. It's not over for the Von Erichs, you know. And this was just we're at chapter 30 right now, and it's a 60 chapter book.
That's right. And you know what's amazing is that on that episode, there was so much of David Manning on there, which was great. And David was our guest last week. What a great job of input he provided. I was very impressed with David.
He's such a great guy, a great, we call him Uncle Dave. He's been like just such a solid member of the family too, but he's always has had so good at just wording things and putting things in perspective. And, you know, he was a part of all of it too. And he, you know, all the angles, the storylines,
big part.
And he's to this day, one of my dad's best friends. And one thing I was personally like grateful for is we talked about it, I believe on episode 3, about my Uncle Dave's death and the conspiracy about hiding pills and thinking, you know, it's hard for me because a lot of wrestlers believe it too. And if you really think about it, you know, we're just wrestlers. We don't have the power to go to a government and change an autopsy report. And you know, it doesn't work like that, you know. I was glad that, you know, David Manning he's an honest guy. And he clarified that too, because he knows, and a lot of people think that there was pills and had to be hidden. Because I know a lot of guys that would die on that hill saying, no, this is what I was told, you know. And I'm sure they believe that, though. I mean, read the report.
Yeah, no, and if you haven't seen the David Manning interview, go back and watch the episode we did last week. It was an amazing session we had with David Manning.
It was a good claw sesh.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Well,
clawversation.
We've got the big sister teed up, ready to go. We'll take a quick commercial break, and we will be on with Kristen right here on the Iron Clawcast. Stay tuned.
Hello, everybody. We're the Von Erich brothers with the Iron Clawcast. Hey, Ross, I got a question for you. When you want a good beer, a good IPA, that is, what's your choice?
When I want a great beer by a great company and great people, I look no further than Vitamin C Brewing, the best beer on planet Earth, and that's a fact.
They also have sick gear. Sick gear, good beer. VSB, everybody. Go support them.
Hey, Clawcast Nation, it's DJ D-Man. Let me ask you a real, real serious question. What is the one thing you need at a party, event, social get-together, whatever it is you're having? You need good music, don't you? That's right. And do you want to have to worry about playing music all day and all night? No, that's where I come in. I'll bring the sound from downtown and put the boom in your room to make sure your event is a musical success. Give me a call at 817-233-5646, and I'll make sure there's never any barking on your dance floor. DJ D-Man Entertainment.
Oh my gosh, the mystery guest. It's the CEO of the Kauai compound.
No, Dennis, it's my sister, Kristen Nicholas/Von Erich, everybody.
Hey. Hi.
This is like the... Kristen,
she's the brains of the crew. She's the glue of the family. If we didn't have her, we wouldn't have passports. We wouldn't be able to do any international travel.
Anything that involves paperwork or, thinking, moving us to Hawaii, all her.
Yeah. And the eldest of the four kids, four offspring of Kevin and Pam, but certainly looks the best compared to her two brothers.
We're trying. I'm the brain.
Kristen, you have kiddos, and I think maybe you might have some fourth generation Von Erichs. So let's recount the number of kiddos you have.
Okay. Well, Joey and I have five kids, and we have like an open door policy as far as other kids too. So currently we have 11 kids living with us. We definitely, a couple of our boys are excited to grow up and wrestle, you know, if that's an option. And they're like, Abram is,
they still think it's cool.
Yeah, for sure. They do. They want to be just like their uncles and their granddad and great granddad and stuff. So
at 13, they start, wanting to get into other stuff. Like Eli right now, he wants to get like a real job, whatever.
I've been looking at pictures of the boys, and you know, last time I saw them was a couple of years ago, and they just shot up like rockets or so.
Eli and Rush are both taller than me now. So
I could maybe see way in the future, maybe it's them wrestling along with Solomon and Marshall, whatever else is in the oven for you guys.
Yeah. Yeah. The babies that come, you know, what's really cool is, we wanted my sister on because unlike both of Ross and I, you know, we met my uncle Carrie and stuff, but she had relationships with every one of my uncles, and following this Dark Side of the Ring they just did on the family, the Dark Side Confidential, the Von Erich story, we wanted to get her perspective on that. We think the episode was really well done and told the story well, but Evan and Jason, you know, they did a great job. You can tell they're actual fans of wrestling, you know, and not just some producers.
Yeah, for sure.
So Kristen, and I understand this correctly, you were there for the whole time with your dad while they were filming this, right?
Whenever they were filming Dark Side of the Ring. Yeah, we were, my kids came over quite a bit. We live on, you know, a big ranch. And so our house is across a valley from my dad's house. And so, yeah, my kids are in and out all the time, and I'm in and out all the time, and we're always borrowing sugar from each other and stuff. So, it was definitely, I know, like an emotional experience for my dad to, you know, he's so good though with like telling his story and every time making it like the first time he's told it and just being really, invested in what he's saying. And it just makes it where, you know, while you're listening to him, you're just like, you feel like he's just talking to you. He's really like relives it as he tells it. So
that's really hard to do on TV too, for me. And for those of you who haven't done TV, I thought that was going to be like a cakewalk, but as soon as the cameras, you see the red button, it's hard not to like shut down, you know, and like, well, there's cameras on me, everybody's listening to my voice, words are coming out of my, you know, it's hard not to start getting into that. And what's, you know, my dad is, you know, he's really good. I guess he's had some experience, but it's watching him do it was really, really like cool. I was trying to learn from it and stuff. Because, you know, it is difficult.
Yeah.
What was the hardest part of that process for you guys, you know, during the interview? What was the hardest part?
I mean, I was there too, helping and stuff. And just getting, because my dad tells stories so great, and then sometimes he'll tell it, he'll just remember it exactly, and then another time he'll leave out some details and stuff, and so I didn't want to keep interrupting or whatever. And so he just had like really good days, and then some day, like the first day they came, they kind of came in late and stuff. It was towards the end of the day, and my dad, who was going to go feed the sheep, and he had a whole bunch of stuff.
Just mentally checked out.
And then the second day they came in the morning, and that's when my dad's like, you know, been thinking and praying and all that stuff. So he was like in a great state of mind, and they really, it took all day. You know, they were here from like 9 a.m. all the way till 9 o'clock at night, sometimes 10 for 3 days straight. And so it was, you know, there were short breaks in between and stuff, but yeah, it was, they pressed them, and they got, you know, a lot of great stories out of them and stuff. But he wants his story to be used for, you know, for people that are going through depressions and loss and all that stuff.
Yeah. For me, I know that just in line with my dad really being invested in like what he's saying and really feeling what he's talking about, whenever he told the story of Brody, that's what he always called him, Brody, but Brody finding Uncle Dave, and how his, like, you could just tell when my dad was telling it, my dad's, even though he had lost his best friend and his brother, his heart was broken for Brody having to tell. He's like, oh, Frank, you know, yeah. The way my dad told that, like, if you know my dad, you know, like he his heart hurt just as much for Frank, you know, for having to tell my dad that my Uncle Dave was gone. So moments like that, because you could tell my dad was just really, you know, feeling the things he was talking about. And so, you know, it's always hard to watch, you know, somebody that you love relive something that's painful.
That shows my dad's compassion, you know, because that'd be a, like an anger, some, not anger some people, but imagine, you know, your brother just died you know, this, no, I guess my dad has such a good heart. He has such a good heart. He hurt for him having to tell him, but I actually had a question. What uncle did you have like the best relationship with?
I was actually really close to Uncle Chris. We were 10 years apart. I have a great relationship with Uncle Kerry too. I, you know, he was
really fun.
So fun. Definitely. Like, my dad was very protective, and Uncle Kerry was definitely the fun one. And, would always, like, we had the same birthday. And so, we'd go, you know, eat sushi or whatever together. And he, as a family with my cousins and stuff, and he would, you know, I remember one time I asked if I could get ice cream, and my dad was like, nah, you're good. And Uncle Kerry was like, oh, it's her birthday. Like, and so he got, I don't know how he got them to do it, but it was like 10 scoops of chocolate ice cream. And like, he was just always over the top with stuff. So, I definitely like feel like I, spent the most time with Uncle Kerry, but, my Uncle Chris, we were closer in age. And I was the first, you know, girl around, like grandkid around and stuff. So I was always on the four-wheeler with him. And like, we had a big, like a big gym on the property, and he would work out. And it was just my job to, you know, tell him like he looked bigger and, you know, he was doing a great job, and go turn the music down if I needed to and stuff. So, yeah. So I feel like I am lucky that I got to have a good relationship with him, because, yeah. You know, he definitely wasn't close to a lot of people. So, yeah, I that one really broke my heart, because I loved Uncle Chris so much.
Not a lot of people have good Chris Von Erich stories, you know, yeah. And it was cool that she found like the one soft spot in his heart, you know. Is you know, my dad loved him so much, but he had a crazy temper, and, you know, a lot of old wrestlers, old timers would tell us that.
Yeah.
It's like, if he wasn't a Von Erich, I would have slapped him. You know, he had a pretty hardcore temper, I guess.
How old would Chris be today? He would be in his 50s, right?
Yeah, he was born, let's see. I think that he was born in 1970. So he would be, 51.
Wow.
And I don't know if a lot of maybe people know this, but I always heard that Chris had a very artistic side to him. He liked music. He liked painting. Mm-hmm. He had some art qualities to him, right?
He was an amazing artist, and he was really interested in like Native American culture. He the property that we lived on, it was like 500 acres in East Texas, and he. There's like burial grounds on the property and arrowheads and a bunch of cool stuff like that. So he collected the arrowheads and was just like a really good, he would draw just like the little dots. I don't know what it's called, but with a pencil, he would do the
stick figure.
Yeah, exactly. He would do stick figures. Great ones. He did like portraits of like, well-known like chiefs and stuff like that. He was definitely really deep, and definitely, I mean, he had like a, you know, it's kind of that artist mentality of kind of like, he did have a little bit of like anger towards the world and, you know, his lot in life and stuff, but but I mean, he was he you know, loved me, so
That you got to think about how hard that would have been.
Yeah,
you
just have, to deal with and handle.
Yeah, to have, you got five brothers, larger than life, 6'5", 6'6", 6'3", giants, great bodies, and you're 5'4", you have asthma, your bones are brittle. You know, it's like my dad felt like, he was angry, he almost felt like he got cheated a little bit. That's how he felt, but he was super artistic, and so they wanted to use him in that way for world class and stuff, and you know, my sister has a good way of explaining to us stories of our uncle. So we feel like we get to know him even better. You know, we feel like we know him through stories, you know, with what my dad, my mom, and my mom also had a really close relationship with all of them and knew all of them, went to school with all of them. And, but it's cool to get a sibling perspective, you know? And so that's why we love to pick our brains about this, because we've asked her almost every question. So asking, this is like repeats, you know, but I did want to ask though, what was the environment like in world class, in the sportatorium, like walking into the sportatorium for the first time? Did that feel like another home to you?
Oh yeah, that was, if I think about it now, I get that, like that homesick feeling. I ran around with Chris Adams' daughter, Jade. We would sit, the wrestlers' families would sit upstairs in an area called the cage. We called it the cage, and it had like, basically it was like chicken wire, and it was at the top of all of the bleachers, and then there were stairs in the back that would go down to like my granddad's office, and you know, like the just different, there's a couple offices there, and like that's all, and then downstairs again right into the dressing rooms, and then there was like a back exit. And so like, I was just up there all the time. I remember, like granddad was in a meeting one time, and I remember, just my legs were really tired from standing up. And I remember like shifting my weight, like, let me see if my left foot will get tired if I give my right foot a break, and then shifting back and forth. I remember, you know, just, and you could see Reunion Tower out the window. And I remember just, you know, it was a really cool way to spend childhood. And it was also fun because in the cage, like the fans that really knew about the sportatorium, they knew that that's where the wrestlers' families would sit. And so like, you know, I would go like, so you can go to the actual metal fencing part of the cage, and like fans would like give you candy or like try to ask you questions. And and I loved to talk. So I was out, my mom was like, come back up here, like stop. But I spent a lot of time, you know, talking to people, and it just felt like a big family. It was a great place and a great way to grow up, for sure.
Justin, when you think of the sportatorium, do you remember that the smell of the sportatorium in terms of the food, the French fries?
For sure. Candy? Yeah. And then also upstairs.
I apologize on Dennis's question. Sorry. Yeah. We'll talk about this later, then.
No, also upstairs it was, you know, Bronco Lubitsch was up there. So there was like a smell of like cigars. And then my granddad had his Pall Malls and too. So, I mean, it was definitely that mixed with like, you know, nacho cheese and just the concession smell. And then just, you know, the smell of our dressing room. Like the wrestler's dressing room is a really specific, it's like the cologne Dracar and like baby oil and like sweat and like it's just like a really specific like leather from everybody's bags.
I probably hadn't changed very much.
No.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
just like there's like very specific kind of feeling that I mean I can't even, I haven't smelled that in a long time, but yeah, it would definitely bring back memories.
You know how smells do that when you smell something and it's like brings you straight back to like a time and place,
or like
a song or something. Like
that, yeah, exactly.
But there's times that I'll smell a smell and I'll think of like the exact spot in Japan when we were doing something or whatever. So that's really cool. Yeah. I know Sportatorium definitely had a smell.
Yeah,
it did. Hey, Kristen, you know, I think of all the kiddos, you probably have maybe the most vivid memories of David. And I've got a question from one of our great supporters out there, from Sharon Garman, and she said, what was David like outside of the ring in his personal life? And does your dad think things would have been different in the business had David have lived? So what was David like in personal
life? So I was young when Uncle Dave died, but I was also always really, I was the oldest of the cousins and stuff. So I was always trying to get like involved in like all the grown-up conversations. So I felt like I probably knew everybody really well, just because like I was with my parents, like they were trying to decide something and I felt like we were trying to decide how to handle something, even though they didn't really probably need me. But so
what did they do without me?
I know. But Uncle Dave was like definitely like the thing that stands out the most was just my dad's like best friend. They would like, nobody could crack my dad up like my Uncle Dave. So I remember just, them like, you know, just like bending over laughing so hard about just where they couldn't even get the words out. You know, it's probably, I don't know if I've
it's like a brother dad. Humor, you know, and you and your brother have like inside jokes that don't make any sense to other people and stuff. You know, we have those too, but it's cool hearing that from my sister, 'cause it shows that the older we get, the more Von Erich we even feel. You know, at the beginning of our career, it felt like we'll never be anything like those guys were larger than life. And then hearing that we have so many similarities is pretty cool.
Yeah. He was really funny and had like a serious kind of like outward, I think, sort of presence, but just like, even if it was only going to make my dad laugh, he, you know, would staying in his serious character could still crack my dad up by saying the right thing. And he was really like just a great uncle. I mean, I remember like that was the first time I ever went on a horse. He took me on his horse and without a saddle and stuff. And I was so scared that I was going to fall off without a saddle. And for some reason we had like a picnic or something outside. So there's like a salt shaker. And he like sprinkled some salt on the horse's back and he was like, oh, now you can't fall off. Now it's good. And I was three. So I was like,
oh, that's, you know, cool.
I got a question right here. I wrote it down. Someone sent it in from a DJ D man. I don't know what kind of stupid name that is, but who is the biggest flirt out of the uncles? Name's a little outdated.
Oh, terrible question.
Yeah,
horrible
question. Why would that guy want to know
that? Why would that guy want to write such a question in?
I definitely remember the most ladies in Uncle Carrie's life for sure. For sure. But he was just, Uncle Carrie was just like the life of the party and, you know, really funny and could just crack anybody up at any time. So I remember when I was in sixth grade, my dad and Uncle Carrie picked me up from school and they were going to surprise me. And we were going to go to St. Martin as my dad was going to wrestle there, or both my dad and my Uncle Carrie were going to wrestle there. So it was this big deal. Just the three of us were going to go. So we went and I remember, Uncle Carrie had a lot of girls that wanted to hang out with him and stuff, and like he was I just remember thinking like, gosh, everybody loves him, you know. I didn't think anything weird about it, but yeah, he I would say him, for sure. Uncle Mike was married, and Uncle Chris, I just remember one of his long-term girlfriends, and they weren't really that flirty, but
Michael, so, Dave had like a my dad said, or what they were saying, what'd you say, Dennis?
Well, I was gonna say, did,
before you rudely interrupted.
Yeah, sorry, a little bit of a delay. I know I'm very rude. So Mike was married.
It's okay.
Thank you.
Uncle Mike was married very young, and I believe they divorced before he died. But he was married. I had an aunt, Shaney, that was I just remember being like stunningly beautiful, and she was really young and I was a kid, so I thought she was just like, I mean, we would like hang out and do art projects and little stuff together. So yeah.
And was David married as well? Did he didn't have any offspring, did he?
He had one baby, Natasha, that would have been older than me, and she I think died of SIDS before I was born. And yeah, he was married twice.
She was young when she passed away, right?
Yeah, SIDS. She was, I think, like a couple months old.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Infant. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you remember the vibe kind of being different around, like if there was going to be a big show or like a big match, or do you remember any like big, memorable, like title matches or anything?
I mean, I wouldn't have known the names of the matches. I just remembered like they're going to the Cotton Bowl or it's going to be at Texas Stadium. I remember that kind of thing, but not like the show name.
Do you remember when Uncle Kerry fought for the NWA title?
Ric Flair?
Yeah, Ric Flair after Uncle Dave passed away. He was like taking
his place. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, that one, that was, I just, there was just like this buzz of energy to like go to this, to go to this big show. And I remember like everybody that, like all the wives like getting ready all day and it being like I think we actually got to sit upstairs in a box. But yeah, I remember that just being like super exciting. And like anytime there was like a really big show like that, I remember the whole, like the house was just really alive. People were in like helping with stuff and everybody's changing outfits, and it was just like,
I feel like I'm there now.
Yeah, it was just exciting. And then we were in East Texas. It was a long drive to Dallas, so it was like, making the trip too. It was like 3 hours away, so it was just exciting. And then my dad would get in his like TV mindset where he's more kind of pensive, and we knew to like just let him do his thing, and then. Uncle Kerry would get like more like playful and like hyper almost before that kind of stuff. That's kind of how he dealt with that, I think, kind of pressure. But
nice.
Yeah, but for sure there was definitely. And then I remember whenever we were at those shows, I remember it was, I just have like specific memories, like whenever people would chant like "We want the claw," I remember as a kid, I would be like, I would just imagine they were saying different things. I could like make them say like, like happy birthday or like whatever I wanted it to be. Cool. I would just, because they're doing it for so long. Birthday. Yeah, because I remember that. Or and then like whenever they were saying Kevin, I remember if I said daddy, I could really, while they chanted Kevin, I could really hear them saying daddy too. I mean, I just like,
little kid
stuff. Yeah, for sure. I remember that. And then, and being just really excited at those shows. And then like, there's like this relief whenever it's over too. We'd go to a big dinner and
that's okay.
Yeah. Everybody's okay. Yeah.
I always remember dad getting in the car after, and like leaning in the back seat and how'd you like my match? And then the whole car smelling like,
and he's taking sweat. His tape off his wrist.
There's people banging on the door,
trying to get in the car. And he would just be like to my mom, like, go, 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 go. And he's like taking his tape off. He like turns on like ZZ Top or whatever, playing the drums on the dash.
Blast Ringle again.
And there's those all those smells from, it's just very specific, I guess, not like everybody else's childhood.
That's why we love picking her brain too, because, my dad would stuff her in his bag like after shows, because, that's his first daughter. Parents are usually more protective of the first kid, and loosen up as you start having kids. But yeah, he'd shove her in the bag and hide her, you know, and he said one time he was running with her through the crowd and she unzipped it and said, "Daddy, it's hot in here," you know, and all the fans see that. Made him look crazy.
We could go on. I mean, we've got hours of questions we could ask you. I've got one question. Was there any heel that ever scared you? Like, did somebody like Kamala scare you running across them, or any of the heels give you?
I was scared initially. I mean, they were all resolved, but I was scared initially of Kamala because I saw him in the dressing room and his paint had started to come off and it was scary. And then, so my granddad, I was little then, but my granddad, I didn't know this, but worked out something with him where my granddad comes in and says, "Did you scare my grandbaby?" And he's like, I'm sorry. And my granddad like fights him in the dress, cause I'm in the dressing room, like sitting there. And so my granddad made him come apologize for scaring me, you know? And then with Bruiser Brody,
Wouldn't be scared of him?
Yeah. I was scared of him. And my dad had me sit with him and he was just like, you know, I'm nice. I might look big and scary, but I'm nice, you know, and just like felt better about that. He had a real soft, you know, kind of demeanor about him to try to get me not scared. And Missing Link, I was so scared of Missing Link. And the same kind of thing. I wish my grandmother was here, but she had a good story about Missing Link, the same kind of thing where, he came in the dressing room or something and saw me and like was like, you know, extra nice, like gave me a flower, you know.
You can see the soft side of it.
Yeah, for sure. So those were kind of the three I thought were scary.
Yeah, I got a question. So my sister knows a version of my dad that I'll never know because someone that hasn't experienced loss and tragedy and death, you know, my dad had to have been a different man at that time, you know? And so did watching dad transition from the first death, you know, learning how to cope with it and the second, the third. And because now I get the version of a man that searched and, you know, and now he has a relationship with God and he's like more grounded and stuff, but you got to see dad like trying to find out who he is. And, how was that watching him? Like, it's kind of a loaded question, but I'd like, watching him transition, like after Uncle Dave, did he handle all pretty much the same? Or
what are some things you noticed?
Yeah,
when he went to the gun store, all that stuff. Like that was when you were there.
Whenever I remember, my dad is like definitely the strongest, like wisest person you know I've ever met, and my role model, and my brothers are awesome too, and always seeking to be like wiser and like
we'll elaborate better on that later about how great we are.
And it's amazing to watch like how God does things. But I whenever my Uncle Dave died, I remember like we were at when they got the news, we had to go somewhere. I mean, I was really little, but I remember we were at some like I think it was like a motel. And I remember David Manning was there, and I remember all my uncles and stuff, and they were all sitting in this motel room, like on these two double beds, and they were just like broken, you know. And I remember they were like, "Stay out, baby, stay out." So the door was wide open, but I was kind of walking up and down the corridors, like an outdoor corridor, and just like dragging my fingers on the rails, kind of just like, wow, this is the heaviest thing I've ever felt, you know, because my dad, I never had seen my dad cry. My dad was like sobbing, and everyone was just so somber, and you know, it was just I knew like something. I'm in general pretty like I feel what other people are feeling, you know. So like I remember just like being as crushed as my dad, just feeling like his pain and my mom's pain, my grandparents' pain, and you know, it was just really, really
heavy,
yeah, for sure. And so then that definitely was hard on him. And I think he got right after that one, he, instead of like kind of turning into the person he is now and kind of handling it like, you know, like letting it refine him, really. In the moment, he was just, you know, angry and And yeah, just really upset. And
how old was he, 20 something?
Mad at God. Yeah. And they were inseparably close. Like my dad and my Uncle Dave were.
Dad was 25 at the time Uncle Dave died, or is he old, 26 or something?
He died in 84. Dad was born in 57. So what is that? And
27 years old, if my math's correct.
27?
Yeah.
I mean,
I think that's heavy then. That's yeah. My age.
And I think him and Uncle Dave were like 14 months apart or something. They were, I think, but they were very, very close. And so I remember that being just a really like devastating thing for the whole family. Like probably the heaviest of all of them.
Yeah. It was,
you know, first. The first. Yeah. It wasn't like this again. It wasn't that kind. Yeah. It was just like.
Nobody's conditioned to it yet. You know, it was just a new feel. And my Uncle Dave was such a. You know, a go-getter, you know, he did seem like invincible from the stories we hear and stuff and from the videos and all that. For him to be the first, you know, was probably really heavy. But after that, so after mm-hmm. Uncle Dave passed, and then the next was Uncle Mike. Mm-hmm. And so, because I know that one hurt Dad really bad. Yeah. Uncle Mike looked up to my dad a lot.
And he was such a, Uncle Mike was so kind and like, just like tender-hearted that it's like, it was like, anytime somebody that you love is going through something like where they, you know, feel like, you know, taking their own life and you're going to feel like, whoa, what could I have done? You know, what should I have done differently? So I think there was a lot of that probably. I mean, I'm sure there was in the family.
Yeah, there's gotta be.
And then, but that one I know really hurt my dad just because Uncle Mike didn't, you know, he was just so kind, you know, super generous. My Uncle Mike was like off the charts generous. Like after mm-hmm. he died, people were coming forward and saying like, you know, he had been paying my rent for me for like, you know, the past 2 years, or like I used to be homeless or this lady was like, he, you know, buy me groceries. Yeah. Like he never told anybody. It's how he was, you know,
that's how we aspire to be. He didn't tell anybody this stuff. And these people came like, hey, where's my check? You know, and Uncle Mike was like taking care of him and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and
Mike was something. He was quite the decent human being. And that's.
Yeah. A lot of people in our family now, because that's going to be one of my questions in a second, comparing personalities to Ross and I stuff. But a lot of people like my grandmother, my dad, they all thought that Ross's personality is a lot like my Uncle Mike. Not so much as like he's probably because Ross isn't shy. We got to wrestle and do all this stuff. And, you know, and Uncle Mike, I think, was a little more
introverted
and stuff. But at the same part, like, I guess, attributes or not personality a little bit, because they're both generous. It's harder. Like, I have to be on myself about being generous. I'm doing it, but I'm like, not like a cheerful giver. And it's like, I think about it. I remember, I write it down.
Marshall, you're so stingy.
No. You watch your mouth, Dennis. When this podcast is over, I'm gonna come down there.
Yeah, sorry, forgot we're live.
Oh, camera shook me.
Whoa, I feel like I left my body for a second.
That was scary.
Okay, so
but my dad, after like by the time Uncle Carrie died, my dad had more of a like. It wasn't like this devastating. I mean, he was obviously devastated, but it wasn't like, you know, it's like dropping something and it's shattering and then gluing it back. And I mean, it's kind of like, okay, let's pull ourselves together kind of thing. My dad was, when Uncle Carrie died, was a man like, oh, Carrie, like, oh, girl, why? It was more like, but you know, my dad already had that hope. He had, you know, he knew that, you know, now like he had come to a point in his life where he believed he would, you know, one day be reunited with his brothers and they were in a better place. And so that definitely, you know, got him through. And I think then by the time Curry died, at that point when my dad had developed that faith, he was able to just be like, you know,
I wonder if there was like, because there was like almost a sense of like relief, like after, because imagine, you know, my dad loves really hard. And I mean, just losing one sibling, but then back to back, you're like, well, who's next? You know, with the kind of life they were having. My Uncle Carrie was, you know, in WWF at the time and, you know, experiencing with drugs and all this stuff. And It was, you know, my dad loved him so much, but he was out there alone. He's by himself. They weren't together. My dad was a family man already. And so I'm always curious about that. There was a little bit of like when it was over, now he knows he can't get hurt again, you know, right. As far as like losing everything that he loved. But,
Uncle Kerry was living at that point really like recklessly too. I mean, I wasn't allowed to ride with him. My dad was always really protective. I was really close to, you know, we were all close, all the cousins and stuff. And I remember Uncle Kerry at that point was living pretty dangerously and, you know, doing stuff that he shouldn't have been. And like, we all knew it. And so I think it might be a little bit of a, if you're constantly worried too about the safety of the person you love, I mean, not necessarily relief, but kind of like a little like closure. Cause it's, I mean, if you have a family that, have a drug problem or struggle with, you know, mental health stuff. I mean, it's definitely, if you're as like empathetic as my dad, where you like really feel, you know, what your brothers are going through, then I think that's a heavy thing to walk around with all the time. So I think he definitely probably I feel like he could have,
we'll edit that part out.
if he probably felt a little bit of
closure.
Yeah.
That's a heavy, you know, that's a heavy thing to go through. And I'm sure when it was just my grandmother and grandfather, you know, that as parents, you know, that has to be, you know, a lot of weight on your relationship, you know, losing all your boys. And
yeah,
I don't know if you've read it, but there's a book called The Von Erich Family Album. Mm-hmm. And it's from my grandfather's perspective. And it's him and my grandmother telling the story. And it was before, it was just my uncle Jackie had died and my uncle Dave. And so you get to see how bonded and close they were at that time. Mm-hmm. Because it was almost like, okay, if we can get through that, we can get through anything. And it was crazy to see that how it affected them in the long run when it was just them two after that. And even my grandfather, he had brain cancer and stuff. And you heard the stories about him with my dad and pointing a gun at him and stuff. And he just wasn't, you know, he wasn't there. Yeah, he's suffering, you know.
I really feel like death and loss and grief, like one thing that I've kind of taken from everything is like, although like death and losing people that you love and real grief, like, I mean, it can bond people together and it can definitely refine you. I mean, to be refined, you have to go through fire. Like if you're going to be stronger, you have to go through.
Point being, it doesn't feel good. Right. It's not pleasant.
No, exactly. It hurts to get like, you know, exactly. So, but then if it's multiple times and if you're grieving together as a family multiple times, I think it can almost like reduce you to just like the bare bones of who you really are. Wow. So it better be, you know, it better really be strong, because then it's like, then you're just all left looking at each other and you're like, it's almost like there's this, like, why are we the only one, you know, like what, how come, you know, like it's just, it can really pull up some emotions and some stuff that you didn't even know you had, you know, like it's not, yeah. I mean, I feel like losing it, you know, a child for my grandmother was, I know she was devastated by Uncle Jackie. Like I, you know, I can cry telling her story of losing Uncle Jackie, which we were just having coffee one day when I was in high school and she told me about it and cried. And it was just like, so emotional, and I mean, and so hard for her to even talk about, even after losing all of her other, you know, boys. That one really hurt her the most. And then that, you know, people go through something like that and they can draw closer to, you know, their husband or their other kids and stuff, and just and use it and move on. But I think once it happens over and over again, I can't imagine, you know, being my grandmother, but I feel like it would be really hard to, you know, continue to let it refine you without there being any kind of like, you know, hardness or just, you know, kind of like almost like maybe blaming each other or like, you know, anything like that. So,
That's traumatic.
You hear that, Clawcast? That's why we had her on. She's great with words. See all those big words coming out of her mouth? That's verbal murder. Well, I couldn't do it.
We always said if Kristen had been a boy, you know, she would have probably been the ringleader for sure and stuff, and make us look a lot more smarter.
Marshall, that's where you're wrong. She is the ringleader.
Okay, there you go. That's good.
Yeah, I just didn't get to go wrestle, but I watch their matches and tell them what I wish they would have done differently.
Yeah. She
always tells us how green we are.
Yeah, what does green mean?
Well, it's a pleasure, you know, Kristen. To have gotten to know you over the years, and I'll tell you what's really, with all the tragedy this family's been through, you guys are also galvanized. You guys have a very close family, and it's grown with the grandkids and more on the way. And Marshall and I were talking this week about this, that, you know, the Von Erich chapter is still being written. You know, what's happened in the past is obvious in the past, is well documented, but the story keeps going on and on and on. And hopefully it'll go on for another, you know, 100, 200 years with generations passed down and the legend continues. And yeah, there were bad chapters, but good chapters are being written today and they're moving forward.
Well, just like we're just talking about refinement and stuff. Yeah, the story's definitely not over. It's something in our family that we've, you know, talked about for my whole life. It is there's something really big coming, you know, and there's something that Ross and I were designed for. My uncles and stuff, they were designed for that season they went through to impact those kids. And there's a lot of amazing stories. Some guy came up to me at a Buffalo Wild Wings and said, your dad's the reason I didn't kill myself and I became a Christian. And they never talked. It was because of his story and what he went through. And my dad did a lot of soul searching and trying to, you know, he's a man that lost everything and did a lot of searching. And he, you know, he looked into everything to name the religion. He was like, if there's something out there, I want to know about it. And he came
searching for truth.
Searching for truth. And that was the conclusion it came down to for him. And he didn't force anything down our throats. All of us have, you know, different experiences, and yeah, that's why I believe what I believe. It's from experiences and what happened and what changed in my heart and things like that. But it definitely brought us closer as a family, and that's one thing, like, I'm 100% sure about, you know, is that there's it's so much bigger than just wrestling, you know. It's so much, there's a huge purpose for each one of us. And whether it's, you know, talking to a kid that's not even born yet, but he'll be at my show in 15 years, if all my wrestling was all just for that time, and, you know, give him a hug or something. And so that's why, you know, my dad's story, we try to use it to benefit others. You know, it's selfish. We're just trying to get famous. And we tried that for the first 2 or 3 years. And if you watch our match, it didn't work out too well. So as soon as we stopped caring, things actually started picking up.
I think Ross and Marshall have the benefit too. They're both like, I mean, you know them, Dennis, but they're both just like always pouring into other people. I mean, I'm sure they don't talk about this much on their podcast, but they're always like taking kids to the gym and just like doing like kind things for people and just always putting themselves, you know, after everybody else. And I think the cool thing is they got to, you know, watch all the takeaways that my dad kind of has from living the life that he lived and figuring it all out. And we get to like see what my dad figured out and be like, you know, and not even really have to personally suffer he did.
Yeah.
And still get to see like, oh, that's what matters. What matters is like loving one another. What matters is like not putting yourself first, not like being all about yourself. Like, oh, that's it. Like my dad figured it out.
And somehow got it into us, because our whole lives, I feel like we experienced all the losses and stuff, even though she actually did. But it's like, we always say, we love you. If someone's leaving, it's like,
don't hang up without saying, I love you.
Don't like, hold grudges.
My dad always was like, you know, bring it to the light. If you're like mad at your brother, or whatever. Like, don't do that thing where you just like, well, he'll figure it out, and then cut the person out of your life or whatever. Mm-hmm. He's always like, resolve it, fix it. And I think it's almost just like culturally normal and stuff to kind of be like, that person doesn't, you know,
they don't have a good
vibe. Deserve
me or something. And really, it's just like, it's for you to walk around. If you walk around angry or like with unforgiveness or bitterness or something, like, it's you suffer too, you know? And it's like, disease. Yeah, it's consuming,
heart,
you know,
disease.
And so, and my dad, you know, definitely like figured out that like, just fix it. Don't, you know, don't stay mad. You know, he always say, bring it to light. He always say, don't go to bed angry. You know, and it was just, it was so cool for us, because we got to learn it without having to, you know, suffer like he did.
Each family member, it's like we're one big body. It feels like Kristen's like the encourager. Yep. If no matter what we're going through, me and Ross and I separately, I'll go over, and she has like that mom vibe too, because, you know, my whole life, she helped raise me. She was like my cool mom pretty much, but you know, but she's always, she's always been the encourager. And it's crazy that a lot of the fans that don't know of her, she's really is like the gasoline in the engine key. She keeps everything going. She's,
Because we don't know what we're doing. None of us do.
Exactly. Kristen really is like, I don't know what we would do without her. We probably wouldn't be wrestling right now, you know. And she's gotten me every one of my jobs, you know, security, whatever I did. What's that called? Mini golf. I worked at mini golf for a long time.
It's a good thing they can't hold grudges, because I do like walk in and they're getting off the phone and I'm like, what was that about? Like, do you know? Yeah. Want me to? You know, like, and I think they could easily be like,
if you don't want to talk about your feelings, and you better be smiling when you walk past her, because she has that mom thing where she can like look at your soul and like, what's wrong? Like, oh, shoot, I just do that.
But she's incredible. And I don't know if people realize this, Kristen is a big a force behind the Iron Claw Cast. She helps us out with things and is a great idea person. And she's an integral part behind the scenes on this. And I'm glad, Kristen, that you're like in front of the scenes tonight with us.
This is kind of cool.
It's so cool. Well, we've got a couple minutes left, guys. And again, and just an incredible week with Dark Side of the Ring coming back out with the extra footage. I've watched it twice. The second time I watched it last night with a good friend of mine that I've known since high school, who used to work at one of the restaurants where your dad and Uncle Kerry would come in. So he has memories of them coming in the restaurant, serving them food. But he watched that whole episode last night with me, and it was gripping for him to see it. And just, I had no idea about this. I had no idea about this. And it just,
that's really awesome, man. You're dating again. That's cool.
Yeah. Thank you, Marshall. I appreciate that. You're so entertaining, Marshall. You're so funny.
Thanks,
man. Hey, by the way, Marshall, I love that shirt. Wear it in 10 years. It'll come back in style.
Oh, man.
He's shaking right now.
Oh, just wait, Dennis. I'm going to beat you up and this little D-man guy when I find out who this really is.
Find him.
Let's do a question. We're going to have a promo off if you're not careful.
Kristen, any parting words you want to give to the Clawcast Nation out there?
Just deep message that will just cover everything we talked about.
Yeah, sum it all up. Sum it all up.
In two words, go.
I think it's easy to
using look. Hand gestures.
Okay.
For using me. Three words. I know. I think it's easy to kind of like look at the whole story and feel like it's completed and feel like it's just a tragedy and like, you know, kind of like one of these like went up and then came down kind of things. And it's really, my dad now is so happy and just like at peace, and it's come so full circle for him. I mean, I wish that, you know, his brothers were here, and I know he wishes his brothers were here too. But it has been like this beautiful story of like restoration, and none of us, we don't know why it you know, I picked my dad, like why he's the only one left or anything, but it's I hope people can look at you know, what he's been through and what the rest of the family had to go through before they passed away, and just see it as, you know, just like more of a story of like, of restoration and of faith, and just see it for like a beautiful thing, because it really is. It was super, super hard, but it can't, like, in the end, my dad
did come from,
yeah, my dad is so appreciative of what he has.
He's happier, and he also has a greater capacity to
yeah,
feel, yeah,
just
yeah,
to let little things go. And
when he hugs you, he like embraces you. He didn't just like, hey bud, give you a hug. No. It's like a, he just like loves so
my
hard.
My dad loves us so much. Like, all of this, like, it's unbelievable. Like, I mean, if we all thought about it, we'd all probably like tear up thinking how much our dad loves us, because it's which is just like, you know, a really, I mean, you know, unique relationship to have with your dad. So, just, you know, just like whatever, you know, you're going through, or whatever kind of like, you know, it hurts in the moment, and it's like, just to remember that it is in the moment, that it's temporal. It's not, you know,
sun will come up tomorrow.
Yeah. I mean, we are speaking from my dad's experience, you know, and like, you know, maybe you won't have to like suffer like he did, but maybe you can just take from his experience and see like, just like, you know,
that's what I'm doing, dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, looking at that. Okay. Stay on this path.
Yeah.
Stay on the path, stay the course. Kristen, we've got to have you back on again. You've been absolutely wonderful. Such great stories, such a really great sharing the memories. And I know there's a lot more memories we want to tap into and share.
We're elaborate more on how great Ross and I are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll do a whole bonus scenes on just how great they are.
Well, that's going to wrap it up for this edition of the Iron Claw Cast, the Dark Side of the Ring debrief, and the mystery guest has now been revealed. What a great mystery guest. We'll have you on all the time.
Thank you.
This has been a good,
hope it wasn't a disappointment.
No. This is probably going to be our most viewed video. So I think so.
Let's do our ending thing now. Where can people watch the Clawcast? Where can people get this content? Marshall, Ross?
So you can check us out on our YouTube channel, the Iron Clawcast. We have a Twitter page, at the Iron Claw Cast, and that's it for the Claw Cast. But now, on platform wise, you can hear us Spotify, Apple Podcasts,
Google Music,
Amazon Podcast, yeah. Anchor. We're everywhere. Yeah. There's no excuse. You got to listen to us.
And Marshall Von Erich and Ross Von Erich, Ram Von Erich, yeah, all
on
that.
On Twitter, at Marshall Von Erich, at Ross Von Erich. And then if you want to get some merchandise, ProWrestlingTees.com, the Von Erich Store, MLWShop.com, and Kristen Nicholas on Facebook.
No. I have a mic.
Follow me on Twitter at CDA Boat. So for Kristen, Ross, and Marshall, we're not Ram anymore. We're Cram.
Even better.
We're Cram.
That was good.
Yeah.
All right. Everybody, thank you for tuning in. Stay clawrific, and we'll talk to you next time.
Bye.
That's time.
Uno, dos, tres, cuatro.
And now that Christmas is gone, would you really think about it? Sucked, right? You can put that in the bloopers.
Here's our outro. All right, guys, have a good one.
Yeah,
still
that,
here.
That's the outro. I'm still here.